All right, Stevie.
All right, the Ira Kaufman podcast is back. We're live at Hooters, Ira's favorite place. No, not your favorite place. I'm Steve Isbiss of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is here. The sage of Tampa Bay sports is in the house. Mr. Ira Kaufman, intern Zach Seifter joining us again, learning as much as he can from Ira.
And the beautiful Hillsborough Avenue traffic whizzing right past us, Steve.
Absolutely. All right, Sage, now your podcast is presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Not much time left for those June offers. Sage, they sound great, those offers. I know you've been out there, and you gave such a dramatic endorsement of Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa last podcast. And, of course, all the podcasts can be found at Ed Morris Cadillac. No, they can't. All the podcasts can be found at Podbean, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, but best of all at JoeBucksFan.com.
Those showrooms are spectacular, Stephen. Spectacular.
They are, Sage. All right, now.
If you paid me a little bit more, I think I would have made it to put a deposit down.
So, Ira, set the stage for the fans. You called general manager of the Panthers, Marty Herney, on a June afternoon. And why did he pick up the phone? How did that go down? And did you tell him, look, Herney, you owe me one. I need all the dirt.
Well, what did you call him?
I called him, and he was in his car, which is good because he's a captive audience, Lee. If he's in his office, he goes, I'm too busy, Kaufman. Click. So he says, I got a four-hour drive, and let's go. And so then the first thing the man tells me, and this is classic journalism. We've all been through this, except you, Zach, and your day is coming. Opening line from Herney. I don't want to be quoted in this article. Opening line. Now, here I am. I'm about to open my heart to this man, and I immediately... And this is what a veteran scribe does. I immediately remind the venerated general manager of your Carolina Panthers that when he was in between jobs, this is his second stint in Carolina, he was canned a few years ago and brought back. But when he was canned, Lee, he and a co-host operated a little Charlotte radio station, a little sports station.
Charlotte, not Charlottetown.
Charlotte, North Carolina.
And when you said venerated, you didn't mean perforated.
They interrupted my podcast. I'm all messed up over here. Look at that look. Ooh. What's going on with her? All right. Anyway, did you cut that off? Just keep going. Anyway, I reminded Mr. Herney that when he was in between gigs and he was working in a little 10,000-watt radio station, who's he call to find out what's going on down in Tampa? Me. I must have done the show four or five times. I'm still waiting for the check. I got nothing. Not even a gift certificate. Not even, I can't get a Cuban cigar or an empanada out of the guy. And I said, Marty, you don't want to be quoted in the article. Well, so why am I talking to you? I basically said to him. He goes, Ira, I don't talk to my local media. I don't talk to the Charlotte people. I go, what about your website? Nope, don't talk to them either. I go, well, you talked at the Combine in February. No, did not. I said, you talked to at the meetings in March? No, did not. You know when he talked? He wrapped up the draft. He did one little pre-draft thing where he didn't say anything. He goes, the landscape's changing. GMs are going into the background. The coach wants to be the guy. I know. I said, I know. We got that here in Tampa. Jason Light's the invisible man. You can't find him. Hey, he's a good man, Ira. Don't take pot shots at Jason Light. I said, I already had last year. I called for his head, and he's still wearing the crown. He goes, he'll forgive you, Kaufman. That remains to be seen, Steve. So anyway, that's how the conversation started. Don't quote me. You can paraphrase me. You can say what I'm saying, but without quotes. And this is how I start my conversation, Steve. That's what journalists go through, my friend.
I'm glad you set that stage. It's kind of interesting. You know, we're here. It's a summer podcast, and you know, I think a lot of times fans don't realize what Lee and you and me and Zach entering the world here, that we go through that kind of stuff.
All the time. All the time.
You know, a lot of times, sometimes you got to just say, okay, fine, we'll talk, get the information. And then at the end, I've sometimes said, hey, that stuff you said about so-and-so, can I use that for print? Would that be okay? Can I let that out? Okay. But it's tough.
Lee's been known to share a beer with Mr. Light. On occasion in the past, and I'm sure this kind of situation has come up, Lee, where you aren't quite sure what's on the record, what's off the record. It can be a squeamish situation.
That's not going to make the podcast, so don't worry about it.
Well, what I can tell you is, along these same lines, this has happened to me more than a couple times, and it would really, ignite me. It would so hack me off. You're talking to a source. You're talking to him. You identified yourself as soon as you call them, like, hey, my name's so-and-so with such and such publication. And they talk to you for 20 minutes, and then they say, this is off the record.
He's right. Lee is right. That is worse than what Herney tried to do to me, because at least he was upfront about it.
I was going to strangle him. And then a very good editor with the Tampa Tribune, Rick Barry, told me, he goes, I explained the same situation to him. And he said, did you introduce yourself with the Tampa Tribune? Right away, early in the conversation, I said, yes. He goes, then it's on the record, unless you agreed otherwise.
Exactly.
He said, if you identify yourself, then that person has no reasonable expectation not to believe their words will not end up in the newspaper.
And young Zach needs to take that to heart, because you're going to run into that kind of stuff.
And now he said, if it's a different story, if you agree, like if they say, like Herney did you, and like, well, I won't go on the record with X, Y, and Z. But if they talk to you for 20 minutes or 10 minutes, and then they say, this is off the record, like, no.
We had a 15-minute chat. And halfway through, he kind of said, when we started talking about McCoy and the reception McCoy got in Charlotte on his third visit, turned out to be his final visit, he goes, you can use this, because he liked that part about how well, you know, the players took him out and this and that. So then after another 10, 15 minutes, and we're talking about all kinds of things, and then at the end he goes, you're not going to quote me at all, right? And then I go, well, I'm going to quote you on the McCoy stuff. He goes, what kind of stuff? I said, and now, you know, it's like handling with a baby.
Right.
And I go, well, the stuff about, you know, how much respect McCoy got in the Charlotte, in the locker room. And he goes, okay, you can use that. But it was very frustrating.
Yeah, it's frustrating, and it's interesting because, and fans, you know, we call you the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports. Here you are, you're calling the Panthers general manager on the phone. He tells you, I don't talk to anybody, and you just had a 15-minute conversation, and you're gathering all this knowledge. I mean, of course, maybe you can share some of it with us, or maybe you already have. That's open for debate.
He feels that if I quote him extensively, what's he going to say to his local media now that he doesn't give any quotes to? So I kind of understand that point, Lee.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it any less frustrating, though.
Oh, that's very frustrating. I'll give people a little peek under the tent about journalism. Steve and I... Oh, shoot, what was it, Steve? 4 years ago? Steve and I were given a document. And in this document, it spelled out all the fines that Josh Freeman had. But this person who gave it to us, it was not Josh Freeman, the person who gave it to us said, "This, you don't run with us. I don't want to see us on Joe Buck's fan." So what am I going to do? I'm sitting on a monster story.
Even if you don't say where you got it from, just don't use it.
Don't use it. Well, if I did use it, this guy would know right away where it came from, immediately know where it came from, and there goes a very, very, not just a good source, but a good friend.
Well, I don't know what the guy expected you to do with it.
Well, what I did
background.
You can't even refer to it.
Well, here's what I did. After about 2 weeks, I thought someone was going to come out with it. I started getting the impression someone was on the scent, so I dropped it in another reporter's lap. Said, here you go, it's yours.
Oh.
He ran with it, then we wrote about it extensively.
Now, Steve, along those lines, and again, I'm going to direct this towards our young man beast intern, Zach, because these are issues that he's going to come across. Steve, what I made a living doing at the Tribune, and it was a pretty good living until they pulled the rug out from the paper. Thank you, Paul Tash. But... Steve, what I would do on a regular basis, you're told something and it said, you didn't get this from me. Happened all the time. All the time. So I thought this was where Lee was going when he made the statement. And then I waited a couple weeks, because that's what I used to do. I waited a couple weeks. And I had a way to do it, because I had an NFL column on Sundays. I write whatever I want in my column. And Lee, I would wait a couple of weeks till the dust settles, and then I make the point that I was told about, leave the guy's name out of it, and it's coming from me, and then when what that person said was going to happen turns out to happen in another week or two, I look like a genius, and the readers say, hey, Ira knows what the hell's going on at one buck place. That's what you do with that kind of material, Lee. You wait and you pick your spot.
And you learn every day.
And you never mention the guy's name. Yeah. Never.
All right.
And, one more point.
Go for it. Make two, Ira. Make two.
This is a subtle point for you. Just because you don't mention
subtle?
I'm on a roll, gentlemen. It must be the diet. Not only don't you mention the guy's name in association with the information that you're presenting, you make sure later in the column and nowhere in the column do you have the person's name, even if it's on a different issue, quoted on something else, because then the reader, who is savvy, and buck readers are savvy, and listeners, they can put two to two together and figure out where the hell you got the first piece of information. Lee, you're nodding your head because you know I'm right about
that.
Yeah,
but don't let out your secrets that easily, man.
Well, that's what I did when I was with the Trib. Here, I'm unbridled, I'm unfettered.
Unbridled.
And Isbeth says, let it go, Kaufman, let it go.
Well, anyway, I just thought I'd bring up that you call the GM, you get all this juicy info, and you can't share a damn bit of it, but it still makes you the sage, and that's just
at
how it goes.
At least he talked to me.
Steve. Yeah, and you're
and you got good background.
Your column on McCoy ran last week with talking to Marty Herney, and so be it. But I didn't want readers who read that to think, that's all Ira got from Marty Herney, you know? But no, it's just how it works behind the scenes.
He's very high on Todd Bowles as a coordinator. And when I brought up my point, Lee, and I made it to you on this podcast, I think Bowles has a very good chance to recapture his reputation now that he's not buoyed down by all the responsibilities. And Herney goes, that's 100% correct. And I think to an extent that hurt Cutter with the offense. It certainly helped him. It certainly hurt him in terms of establishing a balanced offense. He didn't have it his 3 years as head coach because I think in part he was less hands-on with that offense.
It was that, and I think he, whether by happenstance or by, what's the word I'm looking for, by not habit or by planning, he knew he didn't have a run game. So, you know, why beat your head up against a brick wall if you don't have a run game?
He didn't listen to Isbeth saying, get rid of Doug Martin. Chop him up.
All right, Sage. Speaking of run game, your old pal and a friend of Joe Buck's fan, really. Lee talked to him in earlier this year. I talked to him at the owners' meetings. And I actually, I'll leave that alone. But Chris Sims, the former Bucks quarterback, he's been doing his top 40 quarterback countdown, ranking quarterbacks in the NFL. Sims puts in a ton of film study, and sure, you could argue that, oh, maybe this pick is for the upper picks. This one is to enrage some people, and this one's a little controversial. Sure, but the lower picks, I can't go there that he's trying to create controversy by, putting RG3 at number 36 in his top 40, right behind Ryan Fitzpatrick or whatever. So I'll say this, Ira. Sims, who has been a pro-Jameis guy since before the draft, and his father, Phil Sims, was as well a pro-Jameis guy, he ranked Jameis Winston 27th, wedged between Andy Dalton at 26th and Case Keenum at 28th. Well, what do you make of this? What do you think of this? And
well, it's funny you should ask me at this juncture right now, because this very morning, Lee, I listened to Chris Sims for 8 minutes explain why Jameis Winston was picked at number 27. He went in depth on it.
With Florio?
No, there was another guy. It wasn't Florio. And
on TV?
On TV.
What channel?
No, it was taped. I mean, it was something that he said last week when he put Winston at 27.
You don't know where you heard it?
It might have been on the PFT set, but he was not on with Florio. He was on with another guy.
Well, what channel did you see this on?
I'll take this out. I'll cut that out.
I think it was on PFT.
I think somebody's filling in. Somebody's filling in with Florio. Somebody's filling in for Florio.
Yeah, somebody might be filling in. So anyway, in a nutshell, Lee, here's what he said. He said Winston has a top 10 upside.
That sounds like him.
A top 10 ceiling. At times, he looks like an elite quarterback. But this is a direct quote. Unlike Marty Herney, I'm going to direct quote Chris Sims. I can't trust Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
That's what he said. After 4 years, I still can't trust him. He looks at the Bengals game. He's throwing the ball all over the field. He's trying to make things happen. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the biggest knock. Instead of taking the sack, instead of throwing the ball away.
Yeah.
And Lee, you've been a Winston supporter like nobody's business. But even you would acknowledge that is where he's got to raise his game.
And you wonder if that'll ever happen. I mean, I'll take my chances with the guy, but you don't know if, you know, someone.
It's an instinct. It's hard to break.
Yeah, I don't know if it's instinct, but I agree with you. It's hard to break. It's just like, well, I don't know if you call it willpower, DNA, whatever. It's, you know, someone said they on Twitter. They came at me on Twitter last night. That's a bad verb phrase. They Twittered me. Let's put it that way. It's Twittered Steve. It was JoeBucksFan.com. And he said, I don't know if this guy's coachable. It's just that's the way he is. That very well could be, you know.
Steve, it's hard to change a mindset. You can talk to him all you want, and he can give you the answers you want. But, Steve, I'll say this. When the play breaks down on the field in a regular season game, Winston's first thought is not play it safe and live for another day. Arians and Christensen and Leftwich want him to believe that as his first option when plays break down. Give it up.
Does he? Arians?
I think so.
Mr. Risk It?
Aaron says he can't live with a flurry of turnovers.
Well, turnovers is one thing, but, you know, Mr. Biscuit.
What was Arian's quote? I'll live with one.
But, Aaron, let's go back to number 27. Number 27, where does that number sit with you, and where do you think he does belong? But bigger picture, Team Glazer, when they see this and they like Chris Sims, and Sims always speaks highly of the Glazers and of his time in Tampa, and he gave his spleen to the organization and all that, and they're evaluating all things Jameis from public perception on down. They see Jameis Winston ranked number 27th by a quarterback guru who they know is watching film, who they like. Does this mean anything upstairs?
I think they shrug it off, because I think based on my conversations over the years with the Glazers, on the record, off the record, I think they'd probably have him from 15 to 20. I think 15 to 20. We've talked about middle of the pack, where I got Donovan Smith, middle of the pack. Not the worst place in the world, but, Lee, when you're middle of the pack and you're thinking about giving a guy $140 million, that's why he doesn't have it yet, because he's middle of the pack.
And this is why you franchise him.
I don't think they're worried about what Chris Sims thinks of Jameis Winston.
I don't think they're worried about what any of us say, honestly. I really don't, you know. And nor should they, because they've got a lot more information than we do. They know what, you know, this is a perfect example. Every once in a while we hear players do, you know, Kellen Winslow. I'll stop right here because of the siren.
Yeah, well, Kellen Winslow deserves the siren, so we're good.
Kellen Winslow is the perfect example. Did anybody think the guy was going to be this deviant of a human being that he's turned out to be? No. Of course, teams probably knew that. And by the way, hang on. By the way, Shiano said when the Glazers hired him, they told him you got to clean up the locker room. Who was one of the first guys he got rid of? Kellen Winslow. So they know more, a hell of a lot more than what we do about guys' personalities.
Lee, if teams know that these guys are a problem, why don't the Bucks know it? Jeremy Stephens, why don't the Bucks know it, Lee?
I don't think you can. Stephens is a scumbag, but I don't know if he's that as bad as Winslow.
Well, he's not as bad, but he's a bad guy in the locker room.
I say he's a scumbag.
And, of course, my old favorite, Anthony Collins. I love to bring his name up every podcast.
I don't think we can compare Collins to Stephens and Winslow.
I know. Yeah. But it's a degree, a matter of degree.
Well, the Glazers, if you remember, though, when John Gruden was fired, Joel Glazer made that famous quote that said they took the pulse of the fans, that they went out in the landscape and talked to fans, and they felt that change was wanted, and they went that way. So that's the ownership saying we did care what the fans had to think, and we fired a guy off back-to-back 9-7 seasons with a Super Bowl ring.
And they've yet to recover.
Now, let's stay with Sims for a minute. I like Chris Sims, and let's give him his due, guys. He's raised his profile dramatically through his affiliation with PFT and our friend Mike Florio. And he's good on the show. He's good. He's a good foil for Florio. Florio loves to smack him around. So now it's my turn to smack him around. Chris, I know, take this the wrong way. I love you. You're missing a spleen. But some of the things you've been saying, you're missing half your brain. Sims, what are you doing? Tom Brady, number 9. Drew Brees. Where he got? Where's Brees? 8 or 10? Where is he?
Under Cam Newton.
And Brady, too. Under Cam Newton. You know who's under Cam Newton? Cam Newton's understudy. That's who's under Cam Newton. Are you crazy? Cam Newton, he had one fantastic season. League MVP. You know, got him to the Super Bowl. Fine. Last year got hurt. Fine. He's a good quarterback. But, and you want to put him at 9? Okay. But you don't put him ahead of Tom Brady and Drew Brees. What am I missing here, Isbitz? What the hell am I missing?
You're the sage.
I'm the sage.
You're the sage. I don't think he's ranked number 27th. I'd probably put him around 17th.
I'm not talking about Winston. I'm talking about this nutty thing with Tom Brady. What are you doing?
Well, I don't know what he's doing. I really don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think Cam Newton is not a guy any coordinator in the league wants to play against. He's extraordinarily dangerous. He's going to the Hall of Fame in part because of his – he's the best running quarterback in the history of football on top of
And having said all that, no defensive coordinator in the National Football League would rather face Tom Brady-led team rather than a Cam Newton-led team.
Of course not.
Are you nuts? This is a no-brainer.
You know, Steve, and I haven't – I always thought – and I still think Steve is on to something. When you can make an argument Cam Newton is a Hall of Famer, but – huge but now. If he recover, if he does not recover from his shoulder, I don't think he's – I don't think he could soberly talk about him as a Hall of Fame candidate. He's on pace to be one.
Whereas Brady was in one 10 years ago.
Yeah, he's already in.
Sage, no Hall of Fame for Cam Newton?
I think Lee's point's well taken. I think he's got more work to do. I think, you know, he's got a decent trajectory. I don't think he's Ben Roethlisberger in terms of body of work. I don't. But, Lee, I need you to address this Brady Breeze. You know how
What do you want me to say?
I want you to say whether you think in the back of Chris Sims's mind he's thinking about causing a lot of controversy and getting people to talk about it. Is that his motivation?
And
all we can do is speculate.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to hear his explanation, which I guess he'll do in his podcast in due time. I can't venture to guess, but unless the guy was drunk on his rear end one night and did this.
Is this the Stephen A. Smith philosophy? I don't really believe half the things I'm saying, but I'll get people to talk about it. A. Smith's made a lot of money. Skip Bayless made a lot of
millions.
Money doing that. Steve, it works.
I hear you. I don't know. I can't explain the logic. I was mostly interested in Winston at number 27. It's so down there, but he also did have Mariota at 29.
He did.
And basically he's saying these are the low-tier quarterbacks.
Does he have Kyler Murray listed ahead of Winston at this point?
He did. Yeah, he did.
Now, what are you doing, Chris? What are you doing? Now, 27 is a famous number in my mind. Of course,
LeGarrette Blount.
My favorite.
Let's have a little fun with the Cam Newton stuff here.
Wait a minute.
Zach,
I'm
pick up the mic. Well, because I think it's important.
Can I finish this thing about a number?
You can let it all go.
All right. 27 is a famous number.
LeGarrette Blount.
No, forget LeGarrette Blount.
Ronald Jones.
My favorite.
Banks?
My favorite. Sports star growing up.
Juan Marichal.
Todd Zeal.
Was Juan Marichal. Proudly the high-kicking Dominican. Of course, Zach never heard of him. Thinks it's some kind of Spanish dish, Juan Marichal. High-kicking Dominican. Won 20 games 6 times. Never won a Cy Young Award because he's going against Sandy Koufax all those years. But he won the most games of the 1960s. 191 to be exact. Can you imagine winning 191 games in one decade, Zach? One decade. And anyway, that's my number 27. So that's the only reason I'll give Sims any credit for putting Jameis at a famous number 27. I think that's too low for Winston. I think he is maybe 15 to 20, closer to 20. But, Zach, where are you on this Cam Newton, Tom Brady nonsense?
It's out of his mind.
Ah, thank you, Zach. Finally, somebody.
Tom Brady is arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, and he's below Cam Newton.
What about Brees? What about Brees?
Brees is a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's below Cam Newton. You got to be kidding me.
Why is Sims doing it? Does he believe it? Can he believe it?
That's tough to say. I don't know why he has Kyler Murray, a rookie, above Jameis Winston.
Oh, Ira, you should call him for a story. What's the matter with you?
Cherry picking. Cherry picking, Lee. Cherry picking. So, Zach, you're with me. How come our young intern can agree with me on a key point, Steve, and you
what
never
key
can?
Point?
You never can. You're over there giving Sims a side
of the totally
story.
I totally agree with you. I don't know the logic to put a Cam Newton ahead of a Breeze or Tom Brady. Come on. They just won the freaking Super Bowl. How many has he got now?
Six.
Come on.
Thank you, Zach. Thank you, Zach.
All right, Sage, what do you want to hit? All right, Ira, now going back to the Herney thing in your column, you know, Vegas came out with its odds for the NFC South. You dove into that. What do you want the people to know and understand as the Buccaneers sit there at 12-1, and you've got Charlotte, the
basically
Panthers.
Basically like 3-1. Yeah.
You got Carolina at 6-1.
Atlanta about 3-1.
And Atlanta's a little over 3-1, and of course the Saints are a 1-2 favorite. 12-1, you put your money on the Bucs, Sage?
Take it easy, Steve. Take it easy. They've owned the basement, Lee. They've owned the basement, so they have.
Hence the name Buccaneers Cove.
By the way, they're 50-1 to win the NFC title and 100-1 to win the Super Bowl. 100-1. Now, when I say that, I can see Lee reaching into his pocket and putting a sore buck on the Bucs, hoisting the Vince Lombardi trophy. But, Lee, the point I try to make in the column, look, the facts are the facts, and Vegas tries to initiate the most money that is being bet. So the number is 6.5 on the over-under wins.
For season two.
That's the second year in a row the Bucs are 6.5. But I make the point, it's an inexact science, Lee. It is. Because
if it was exact, they'd be broke.
And the first thing that the league does every time the regular season wraps up, they always put out the same release about a week after going into the wild card playoffs. Another sensational year for the National Football League. And the first thing they point to is the competitive balance.
Oh, and I thought revenue.
No, they don't want to bring that up too much, especially during contract negotiations.
Yeah.
And I think they're right. I think they're right to do so. I think they're justified. Unlike other sports, everybody can tell you right now. You know, 20 baseball teams have no shot at the start of the baseball season. 20. But Lee, they always make the point: four or five of the 12 playoff teams are new from the year before.
Except
one or two teams go from the bottom of the division to the top.
Except
the Patriots.
Lee, you're doing a beautiful job over there. Lee, when's it going to happen here? When is it going to happen?
I don't.
It happened in Buffalo, freaking Buffalo, 2 years ago.
Yeah, and they have New England in their division.
And it might happen to Cleveland this year.
Could. I don't see it happening here.
I don't need you being a Debbie Downer. We have been accused of being too negative. Zach, are we too negative around here?
I mean, I don't. What's there to be positive about? 5-11, 2 years in a row.
Here's what you would.
What can you say?
What would you rather have, Ira? A Debbie Downer or someone that speaks what is mine, honestly? Give me the honest.
Well.
You know, do I want the Bucs to win the division? Hell yes.
Steve, we're always honest on this podcast, and I'm going to say it right up front. It's the coaching staff. It's the coaching staff that's given Buck fans any reason to believe, any reason for optimism. It's not necessarily Devin White, Dean, or Mike Edwards.
Ira, you answered your own question.
That's what it's all about, the new coaching staff.
We had the worst defensive coordinator, arguably, in history. We had a head coach who was in over his head.
But, Steve, didn't we go through this when Lovie Smith was coming to town a little bit?
I don't care about that. Right now.
Well, they made it worse.
The optimism is awful, awful defensive coach. Head coach over his head. We got Dirk Cutter's pulling back play calling against the Redskins. They score 3 points at home. It's all over the map. And now we've got an established coaching staff, so that's where the optimism goes. I get it. I talked to a Bucs fan this morning, a big Bucs fan. Actually, a guy we're going to have on the podcast in a couple of weeks.
Wink.
If I agree.
It's a surprise. If you agree. Right. Excellent.
He's
got to
pass the Kaufman test.
Good one, Ira. Good one.
Is he Jewish?
He's very optimistic.
Is he Jewish?
No, he's very optimistic, though. And why? Because of the coaching staff, and I buy it. Look how bad it was.
Zach, there's something to be said for that. I mean, I understand it, but they got to prove it. Zach, they got to prove it.
I mean, it makes sense. You look back at this coaching staff in Arizona. You see success. You look at Cutter, really nothing there. The last two seasons in I think Bowles maybe provides more optimism than Arians in the fact that this defense has really been the problem the last couple of years. And you bring in an established defensive coordinator.
6 months from now, and look, we don't want to dump on people that aren't here, but 6 months ago, is it 6 months from now, is it far-fetched?
In the future.
That we will sit at a podcast in late December and say, guys, it is obvious Dirk Cutter had a terrible coaching staff. Is that far-fetched that we're going to say that in about 6 months?
I could say it right now. Look at the results and specifically the defense.
So you don't even need to see a step up from other Arians.
Exactly. I mean, I love Todd Monken to death, but you take Todd Monken off that staff, who the hell did you have? Horrible.
And that is on Cutter. That's not on.
Yeah, it's on Cutter. And by the way, you know, we bag on Cutter for, you know, sticking with Mike Smith, and I've said it on a previous podcast. How can we do that and not also bring up the Glazers allowed it to happen? I mean, I have nothing against Team Glazer. They've always been good to Joe Buck's fan, but that question has to be asked. It has to be asked. Where were they? Okay, it's great to be hands-off. That's exactly what Dirk Cutter said about his defense. I'm hands-off the defense. That's not a legitimate excuse. If we're going to rag on Cutter for being irresponsible for hiring and keeping rotten assistants, then it goes all the way to the top.
Is it premature right now to say Cutter had a terrible coaching staff? Is that fair?
Is that fair?
Is it fair?
The staff as a whole, was it terrible? Is that your question?
That is my question.
It was well below average. We watched it in person. We saw it play out. So, I'm not going to compare him to
what are you, Jason Light's publicist? I bring him a lot of talent.
I didn't say Jason. I question the totality of the talent as well. I mean, that's a totally different animal. So, but I understand the optimism. I'm optimistic about Arians that he'll know what he's doing and hopefully get these guys going in the right direction. Completely as the season goes on, and maybe they get to seven wins. I see them as a seven-win team right now.
Steve, along those lines, and Lee, you haven't read the column, and I filed it this morning. I don't think Steve's looked at it yet either. but I talked to the vice president of Las Vegas Hotel Superbook, and Jay Cornegay.
When's he going to bring you out there?
The first thing, when you bring me out for that Raiders game.
All right.
The first thing he said about the Bucs is, basically, for years, the Bucs have been considered a talented team that didn't play up to its talent. That's the first thing he said.
Interesting.
What's that go to? Coaching.
It also goes to the wise guys who study this stuff, and they have their own team of stat guys, and they dive very, very deep. It's not just about the perception of the public.
Four more weeks.
We're going to wrap up this podcast soon. We're not done yet. First, anybody who didn't listen yet, go back to last week's podcast. Anyone who didn't listen yet, go back to the last podcast. Derek Brooks, interviewed by intern Zach. Great stuff from Brooks. We've already written about it by now.
Better stuff than Brooks gives me. Better stuff.
Jealous, Ira?
A little bit.
And we've already written about chunks of it on JoeBucksFan.com. But hearing Brooks, it's very good stuff. And also, Ira Tampa 2 rolls on. Your show with the Identity Tampa Bay. And we love you there. You're still on Spectrum Sports every Monday night. You got your Fox gig coming back.
And I'll be back on the Fox.
What are you pimping today? You got a polo shirt with some label on it. What are you pimping today?
If it's free, it's me, Lee. That's what it's all about.
Hopefully soon we'll have a couple of unique announcements regarding you and the regular season, which is exciting. And Ira, a couple of quick trivia questions for you as Zach prepares his sage questions for you. Ira, who has more rushing touchdowns, Mike Alstott or Cam Newton?
Career,
yes.
Mike Alstott.
They're tied.
Trick question.
How about Cam Newton and Tiki Barber, 10 years pounding the rock for the Giants? More rushing touchdowns.
Cam Newton,
yep. And,
Rondé wants to know why Tiki Barber's not considered a Hall of Famer. He had some great seasons.
He was a great player. He wasn't a Hall of Famer.
For about 3 or 4 years, Lee, he was great.
I know, but that.
He was beyond great. He was extraordinary.
For 3 or 4 years.
Sage, Larry Zonka or Cam Newton?
Cam, I would say.
Cam Newton.
No, Zonka had 64 touchdowns.
Wow.
And Cam Newton had 58. And you know what? If Newton can squeak out just one or two more seasons, you know, and if his arm isn't what it's supposed to be, a couple more seasons, he's going to end up among the all-time greats in touchdowns at the quarterback position. I think you and your fellas there.
The problem is we're not judging quarterbacks primarily by their rushing touchdowns.
No,
Steven.
But you. It would
otherwise, hit, Bobby Douglas might be involved.
That's right.
It would hit your standard of can you write the history of football without Cam Newton? The question would then be.
That's not my standard. That's Ira Miller.
Well,
it's another Ira.
Friend. Another Ira.
By the way, Zach, Bobby Douglas was such a brutal quarterback, he couldn't even make the Bucs roster.
Oh, boy.
That's how brutal he was. And the Bucs have had some brutal quarterbacks.
Ira, real quick, just because since it was here and I had it going, as Zach finalizes his questions, Tiki Barber, one of the all-time greats in yards per carry. History, 4.7 yards a carry through his career.
I don't know about the all-time. That's a very healthy average.
What was his average for picking up blonde interns?
you see DeKemper right away.
I think he was...
That's a strong average, Steve. It's a strong average.
I think he was 5 for 5 on the blonde interns, as Lee said.
I think Jim Brown's number one, 5.2.
Closed his career with
Superman.
Closed his career with 5 seasons that averaged over 1,400 yards a carry.
Over the last 1,400 yards total, not per carry. You said
1,400 yards.
Yeah.
Per season. All right, I'll slice that up nicely. And Zach, what do you got for Ira today?
All right,
Zach,
Ira,
what could you possibly have? For
I
me?
Got some good stuff right here, man. All right,
You're not going back to our menu from last week.
No,
right?
No. I'm done with the menu. Nice. Before we got started, though, you talked about how much you like 60s women from the 60s as opposed to women now. So I got to ask, what was dating like in the 60s?
Come on, Zach. I'm 6 years old over here. I'm flipping baseball cards and playing bottle caps on the street over here. Now, I will say this. You know what stunted my growth socially in the 60s? NFL films, and I didn't like it. And the irony is, who presented, Ed Sable for the Hall of Fame? Me. When that damn Saturday night game of the week and highlights, that's all we had was Saturday night, you know, watching it on the TV. And I used this in the room. Instead of going out with Muriel Berkowitz when I was about 15 or 16, I'm watching Cowboy Redskin highlights on a Saturday night at 7:30. He messed me up. I could have done some damage on the dating scene for years before I got out there. So there's your answer.
Oh,
that's my dating.
That's a doozy.
But Ira, come on. The young
all
man.
You do, you fantasize about Brigitte Bardot, Raquel Welch, like any young-blooded American. That's
the,
what you
the
do.
The young man's looking for some insight, okay? I mean,
I gave him my insight. I was flipping baseball cards.
But let's say it's 1971.
Now, I will say this. I've made up for lost time. Let's leave it at that.
All right. Well, that's a good answer.
Let's leave there it at go. That, all Zach. Right. What else
all
you
right,
got?
All right. So we all know that the – we all
Zach, try to keep a straight face. Keep going.
We all know Bruce Arians' expectations for Devin White this year. The Bucs have big expectations for him. Personally, for you, what are your expectations for him in his rookie season?
I think if the guy could be a little bit better than Quan Alexander, more disciplined, better angles to the football, I think everybody should be happy. If he's a name that is bandied about a little bit when the Pro Bowl voting comes, I'm not looking for him to be named NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. You know, that's one guy that's named out of the whole draft class on the defensive side. You know how I'm going to judge him? By how the whole defense plays. Because he's the middleman, the queen on the chessboard, the king on the chessboard, so to speak. And everything's going to go through Devin White. So if the defense plays middle of the pack, I'm going to give him a lot of credit.
Thanks, Ira.
All right, Sage, you're looking good. Keep the diet going. Next week we'll have a full report on your current. Are you going to give us numbers, Ira? Are we going to get any data on the
on the weight?
Yeah, on the weight.
It's flying off, but this Philly cheesecake I got today, not Philly cheesecake, Philly cheese steak. But you know what? I switched it to chicken. That might save me about 20 calories. Every little bit helps, Steve.
You changed your Philly cheesesteak to chicken?
Yeah, Philly chicken. Because young Zach changed his, and I want to keep up with the Zaxters.
All right.